The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Our prelude today was How I Got Over, sung by Mahalia Jackson at the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom on August 28, 1963. I hope you noticed the images from the march. An estimated 250,000 people marched against racial discrimination in voting, in public accommodations, in employment. At that time, 21 states prohibited interracial marriage. This was a historic moment for our nation, and arguably the one person most instrumental in organizing the march was a 51-year-old Black Quaker from Westchester named Bayard Rustin. So good morning and happy Groundhog Day from Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. For those of you on Zoom, thanks to the magic of the internet and our wonderful tech team, we are also as close as your home. We're a Unitarian Universalist congregation dedicated to challenging the mind, nurturing the spirit, and transforming the world with kindness. I'm Preston Lutwiler, Treasurer of the Board of Trustees, and I want to personally welcome you this morning, wherever you are on your life journey, wherever you are on your spiritual journey. Whomever you love, whatever your gender identity or expression, we welcome you into our circle of compassion and caring. February is Black History Month, and we'll be talking about Black history this morning. The Soul Matters theme for February is living love through the practice of inclusion, and Bayard Rustin was all about that. Fred Rogers famously would say that in challenging circumstances, we should look for the helpers. He attributed the advice to his mother, Nancy McFeely Rogers. For me, the purpose of religion, one of the purposes of religion at least, is to help find and hold up the helpers, the consequential people in history who have made the world and the lives of their fellow humans better. Also just the good people in our communities. Here at TPUF, the members of the caring team. The history-making helpers are the saints of our religion. There are no statues of them in our churches or paintings in the Louvre or the Uffizi, but they have shown us the way. Some are UUs, like Norbert Chopik and Florence Nightingale and Clara Barton. Others are not UUs, like Harriet Tubman, Sojourner Truth, Gandhi, the Reverend Martin Luther King, Jimmy Carter, and just last month, Marianne Buddy. I like to consider these to be adjacent UUs, and I'll tell you this morning why I consider Bayard Rustin to be among them. Now, Linda Weaver will read words from Reverend David Breeden while I light the chalice and the peace lamp.
The sacred is, welcome all to this place of love and justice, this place where we attempt to live up to humanity's highest ideals, highest hopes. Do we fail? Yes, we do, often. Do we try again? Yes, we do, always. Because we are people looking out for each other, all others, and the planet. Welcome all to this place of love and justice, to this gathering where the sacred and the holy are our being together.
I'm going to light the peace lamp, I hope.
Okay. And now, am I doing the peace lamp too? We didn't really discuss this
May
ahead of time.
May peace be with us and with all the people of the world.
Okay.
Our gathering song today is If I Had a Hammer, performed by Peter, Paul, and Mary. The version that you'll hear was a recording in the studio, but they sung it at the March on Washington in 1963. And before we play the music, I want to play a video of an interview with Peter Yarrow, who just recently died, from 2 years ago about the performance of this song at the March on Washington.
At a certain point in Peter, Paul, and Mary's career, we had been together only a short period of time, we received a call from Harry Belafonte, who said, come and sing on this particular march, this demonstration. We were already keenly aware of the fact that there was a civil rights movement that was moving forward in America. It had been going on for some time. At the time, the country was saying, a Pledge of Allegiance with liberty and justice for all, but it was fatuous because it wasn't for all. People of color did not have justice, they did not have freedom, they couldn't vote. In Washington, D.C., if you were a person of color, you couldn't use a public bathroom, you couldn't use a water fountain, unless it said for colored only. So, when Peter, Paul, and Mary were approached by Harry Belafonte, we of course said yes. We were well prepared to sing what we sang. Ossie Davis had come to me and he said, how do I introduce you? So I said to Ossie, say, now we have Peter, Paul, and Mary who will express musically why we are here and what this march is all about. So it was our intention not to entertain, not to make people take a moment off, but to focus on why we were there. And when we did so, It was euphoric. It was euphoric for everybody because the people out there were so jubilant. It was as if for that moment they experienced the sense of the freedom they wanted to achieve. And when that occurred again and again, as people sang and spoke, it reached a culmination point when Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. went into his speech. At that moment, a human being was united with his very core of his soul, and all his heart was bursting forth with a commitment that was extraordinary. And Mary took my hand and she said, "Peter, we're witnessing history being made." We experienced what everybody else did. We felt, now we know what our lives are going to be about. Once you've had that kind of experience, and your heart is connected to it as deeply as those people's hearts and ours were, life is different. And so it still inspires, it still leads those of us who have stood the test of time, who are committed with our whole hearts to achieving equity, justice, freedom, fairness, who want not just our country but the whole world to embrace what it was that we all felt we were saying that day. America came to realize that it had the capacity from the grassroots up to change its path and mold its future. And out of that movement came the anti-war movement, which was supported by Martin Luther King. What America's genius is that we can change and it can come from the people. But we have to stand up for what we believe in as we did then, and it takes courage. In today's world, we have enormous challenges that can be met if we have the courage to do what we did in the Civil Rights Movement. This movement was not about yesterday, it's about our lives right now.
So now we'll play the song, If I Had a Hammer, performed by Peter, Paul, and Mary. And the words will appear on the screen. Feel free to stand and sing along if you would like. If you do stand, make sure the person behind you can see. You can move off to the sides. But enjoy the song.
All over this land, it's a hammer of justice, it's a bell.
I was a teenager, Peter, Paul, and Mary was one of my favorite groups. And I was with a little band, and we would do a lot of Peter, Paul, and Mary repertoire. Our moment for all ages today is a picture about a book, about a song that was important to the American Civil Rights Movement, that was also sung at the March on Washington in 1963. And we're actually going to hear that as the postlude sung by Joan Baez, and it's "We Shall Overcome." Linda
okay.
Weaver is going to do it.
I'm going to read it. So Ryan, did you want to come up? What can I say? Come on up. Okay. I'll let you hold it out for everyone to see. And I'm going to go over here and read it up here. Are you okay with that?
Yeah.
Well, let me see how I'm going to do that.
I'm rethinking this.
Okay, here we go. Thanks, Ryan. And our first slide is, "We shall overcome, we shall overcome. We shall overcome someday." Oh, deep in my heart, I do believe we shall overcome someday. I really want to sing this now that I have the microphone and everything, but I really like all of you, so I won't do that. But I do sing this in the shower. Okay, here we go. We're on to victory, we're on to victory, we're on to victory someday. Oh, deep in my heart, I do believe we're on to victory someday. We'll walk hand in hand, we'll walk hand in hand, we'll walk hand in hand someday. Oh, deep in my heart, I do believe we'll walk hand in hand someday. We are not afraid, we are not afraid, we are not afraid today. Oh, deep in my heart, I do believe we are not afraid today. The truth shall make us free. The truth shall make us free someday. Oh, deep in my heart, I do believe the truth shall make us free someday. We shall live in peace. We shall live in peace. We shall live in peace someday. Oh, deep in my heart, I do believe we shall live in peace someday. Now, I want to talk to you for a minute, some interesting facts about the book. At least I thought they were interesting. So the first slide, notice the school in this slide. This is Little Rock Central High School. In 1954, 60 years ago, Ryan, I was 12 years old when this happened. 12, can you imagine? How old are you, Ryan? So I was 12 years old when the federal government declared that segregation in schools throughout the United States was unconstitutional. This meant that it was now illegal to force black and white children to learn separately. This upset many white people, including the governor of Arkansas, who sent armed guards to the school to block 9 black students from entering the school. After days of protests and riots, President Eisenhower sent the National Guard to escort the 9 children. Okay. So this bus, the next slide, wait a minute, what did I do here? Was there a bus, Ron? Did I have a bus slide, Mike? Do I have it out of order? Okay. This bus is a replica of the bus Rosa Parks refused to give up her seat in. In 1955, 1 year later, there were laws in the South called Jim Crow laws designed to keep black people from receiving the same rights and privileges as white people. Rosa Parks was seated on the bus, and when it became full, she was told to give up her seat for a white person. She refused and was arrested. Her arrest led to the Montgomery bus boycott that lasted over a year. Black people refused to ride on the buses and showed the nation that Black people would not tolerate injustice. And the last slide is that I found, or maybe it was the one before it. Was there a picture of the church? Oh, okay, yeah, that's it. Okay, the church pictured on this slide is the 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham, Alabama. In 1963, members of the Ku Klux Klan bombed the church, killing four young girls and injuring 14 others. The 16th Street Church is still standing today to remind us that as long as injustice exists, the fight for equality is never over. And that's it. Thank you, Ryan. You were an able assistant. Any good luck.
All right, we have our recessional now.
Go, may the spirit of love surround you everywhere, everywhere you may go.
Okay, and now, what does this all have to do with Baird Rustin? Well, Baird Rustin was born in Westchester, less than 20 miles from here, on March 17th, St. Patrick's Day, in 1912. He was raised by his maternal grandmother, and there's a whole story behind that too, and grandfather, Julia and Jennifer Rustin. Julia was a Quaker, but Jennifer was a member of the AME Church, African Methodist Episcopal Church. And the children, nine children, attended the AME church. Now, Rustin had a good voice, and his talent as a tenor helped him get into Wilberforce College in Ohio in 1932, from which he was expelled in 1936 after organizing a strike. Note the beginning of a pattern here. He moved to Harlem in 1937 and began studying at City College of New York and joined the 15th Street meeting of the Religious Society of Friends. Remember, his mother had been a Quaker. So in 1939, Rustin was in the chorus of a Broadway musical, John Henry, and starred Paul Robeson and blues singer Josh White. And Rustin later joined White's gospel and vocal harmony group and also began as a regular performer at the Cafe Society in Greenwich Village, where he met a lot of very interesting people. One of Rustin's mentors was the pacifist A.J. Musty, who led an organization called the Fellowship for Reconciliation, or FOR. And FOR hired Rustin as a race relations secretary in the summer of 1941. Musty, A. Philip Randolph, a name you'll hear again, and Rustin proposed a march on Washington, D.C. for July 1st, 1941, 22 years before the March on Washington. And it was to protest racial segregation in the armed forces and widespread discrimination in employment. A. Philip Randolph met with President Roosevelt in the Oval Office and told him that African Americans were ready to march on the Capitol unless desegregation, especially of the military, occurred soon, like now. On June 25th, 1941, that was 6 days before the planned march, Roosevelt issued Executive Order 8802 entitled Fair Employment Practice in Defense Industries. The proposed march was called off. That was against Rustin's advice. He wasn't sure that that this executive order was going to accomplish anything, and in fact, he was right. The armed forces remained segregated until a second executive order was issued by Truman in 1948 after the war. And even then, desegregation of our armed forces was slow. The U.S. Marine Corps was the last service to desegregate in 1960. So it took them a while. Rustin was an early pioneer in the movement to desegregate interstate bus travel. Remember the picture of the bus. In 1942, 13 years before Rosa Parks, he boarded a bus in Louisville, Kentucky, headed for Nashville, Tennessee, and he sat in the second row. Drivers asked him to move to the back of the bus, and Rustin refused. The bus was stopped by police 13 miles out north of Nashville. Rustin was arrested, beaten, taken to a police station, and then eventually released without charges. He later spoke about what had precipitated his decision to be arrested. And here's how he described the situation. I was going by the second seat to go to the rear when a white child reached out for the necktie, the ring necktie I was wearing, and pulled it. The mother said, "Don't touch her," N-word. And he thought, if I go and sit quietly at the back of the bus now, that child, who was so innocent of race relations that it was going to play with me, will have seen so many blacks go to the back of the bus and sit down quietly that is going to end up saying, they like it back there. I've never seen anybody protest against it. I owe it to that child, not only to my own dignity, but to that child, that it should be educated to know that blacks do not want to sit in the back. And therefore, I should get arrested, letting all these white people in the bus know that I do not accept that. In 1946, 5 years later, the US Supreme Court ruled in Morgan versus Commonwealth of Virginia that racial discrimination in interstate travel was unconstitutional. After that, Rustin and George Hauser, the executive director of CORE, the Congress on Racial Equality, organized what they called the Journey of Reconciliation in 1947 to test the Supreme Court ruling. They recruited 14 men, divided equally by race, to ride in pairs through Virginia, North Carolina, Tennessee, and Kentucky. The participants in this first set of freedom rides were arrested several times. Rustin served 22 days on a chain gang in North Carolina for violating the state's Jim Crow laws. But by then, Rustin was accustomed to prison. He had previously spent more than 2 years in prison. And let me explain. Rustin was a Quaker, an avowed pacifist, and a declared conscientious objector. He refused induction into the military in World War II, and he was convicted of violating the Selective Service Act and was imprisoned in 1944, first in a federal prison in Kentucky and later in Lewisburg Federal Prison in Pennsylvania. At both prisons, he organized protests against racially segregated housing and dining facilities. See the pattern? While in prison, he also organized FOR's Free India Committee. After his release from federal prison in 1946, he was frequently arrested for protesting against British colonial rule in both India and Africa. And in 1948, Rustin traveled to India to learn techniques of nonviolent resistance from leaders of the Gandhian movement. Unfortunately, Gandhi had been assassinated earlier that year in 1948. Rustin participated in American Friends Service Committee task force that wrote, "Speak Truth to Power, a Quaker Search for an Alternative to Violence." It was published in 1955, and this 71-page pamphlet became one of the most influential pacifist essays in the United States on the Cold War and nonviolent solutions to conflict. But Rustin intentionally kept his involvement with the project very low profile, and that was for a good reason. Remember, that was 1955, 2 years earlier, in January 1953, he had been arrested in Pasadena, California, for sexual activity in a parked car with two men. He served 60 days in jail, and the incident brought public attention to Rustin's homosexuality. Homosexual activity was still criminalized throughout the United States, but Rustin had been candid in private about his sexuality. Now it was public. And after his arrest in Pasadena, Rustin resigned from FOR and went to work for the War Resisters League. In 1956, Rustin took leave from the War Resisters League to advise Reverend Martin Luther King, Jr. And remember, Rustin's nonviolent actions in 1942 and 1947 challenging Jim Crow laws on interstate buses. Let me just explain in detail the rules for buses at that time. At the time, the rules for buses in Montgomery, Alabama, reserved the 10 front seats for white people at all times. 10 back seats were supposed to be reserved for black people at all times. White people filled the middle 16 seats from the front to the back, and black people filled those middle seats from the back to the front. When the bus was full, if a black person got on, they had to stand. If a white person got on, the people in the row closest to the front, the black people in those middle seats, had to get up and stand, creating a whole row for white people. So that was Rosa Parks' dilemma. She was in one of those seats where, when a white person got on the bus and the bus was full, she was supposed to get up and anyone else in that row. And she refused to do that. On December 1st, 1955, Rosa Parks was sitting in the first row of the middle section when she refused to give up her seat for a white person, and she was arrested. As the book, as Linda pointed out from the book, the Montgomery bus boycott began 4 days later, on December 5th, 1955, and it ended more than a year later on December 20th, 1956, when a federal court ruling declared that the bus segregation scheme in Montgomery was illegal, unconstitutional. So Rustin was in the middle of this, advising Dr. Martin Luther King and advising him on nonviolent means to try to accomplish change. According to Rustin, Dr. King's view on nonviolent tactics was almost non-existent when the Montgomery bus boycott began. Dr. King was permitting himself and his children and his home to be protected with guns. Rustin convinced King to abandon the armed protection, including carrying a personal handgun. In 1957, Rustin and King began organizing the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. They planned a prayer pilgrimage for freedom to mark the third anniversary of the Brown versus Board of Education decision and urged the federal government to implement that decision. Remember, you know, Brown versus Board of Education said segregate your schools, but the governor of Arkansas said, we're not going to do it. So this was a march to try to encourage the federal government to take a stronger position. Congressman Adam Clayton Powell asked the planners to avoid embarrassing the Eisenhower administration. So they called the event a prayer commemoration. The demonstration drew an estimated 25,000 people to Washington, D.C. on May 17, 1957. King, Rustin, and the Southern Christian Leadership Conference planned a civil rights march adjacent to the 1960 National Convention in Los Angeles. U.S. Representative Adam Clayton Powell, remember, he got involved in the 1957 prayer pilgrimage, got wind of the plans at the Democratic Convention and threatened to leak to the press rumors of a fake affair between Rustin and King. And King canceled the march to preserve his reputation, and Rustin left his position at SCLC. Now, for those of us who lived through the 1960 election between Richard Nixon and John Kennedy, we remember that the election was close. And just my opinion, but had there been a civil rights march at the Democratic Convention in Los Angeles, the election might have gone to Nixon. But that's not what happened. Kennedy won, and that set the stage for the next act. Planning for the March on Washington began in 1962 to be a commemoration of the Emancipation Proclamation 100 years earlier. Rustin was recruited by A. Philip Randolph to organize the march. He drilled off-duty police officers as marshals and bus captains to direct traffic. He scheduled the podium speakers and the entertainers. For reasons I'll explain later, as important as he was in organizing this, he kept a low profile. However, Rustin was featured in a photograph with A. Philip Randolph on the cover of Life magazine on September 6, 1963. And he was quoted as saying he thought the march, quote, made Americans feel for the first time that we are capable of being truly a nation, that we were capable of moving beyond division and bigotry. Now, a few weeks before the March on Washington, South Carolina Senator Strom Thurmond had railed against Rustin as a communist, draft dodger, and homosexual. He had Rustin's entire Pasadena arrest file entered into the congressional record. Thurmond also produced an FBI photograph of Rustin talking to King while King was bathing to imply that there was a same-sex relationship between the two. And both men denied the allegation, but it was enough to encourage Rustin to keep a very low profile in his role in organizing the March on Washington. So Rustin was finally persuaded to engage in gay rights activism in the 1980s, we're talking about 20 years later, by his partner, Walter Nagel. Rustin was an advocate for people with AIDS. That was a big deal at the time. And he came to feel that how people responded to him, not only as a black man, but as a black gay man, was the new barometer for social change. And in writing about the 1942 incident on the bus outside Nashville, Rustin said, "It occurred to me shortly after that, that it was an absolute necessity for me to declare homosexuality, because if I didn't, I was part of the prejudice. I was aiding and abetting the prejudice that was a part of the effort to destroy me." Because same-sex marriage was not officially recognized in 1982, Rustin, then 70, and Nagel, 30, sought to protect their union legally by having Rustin adopt Nagel. Nagel explained, "At the time, marriage between a same-sex couple was inconceivable, and so he adopted me, legally adopted me in 1982. That was the only thing we could do to kind of legalize our relationship. We actually had to go through a process as if Baird was adopting a small child. My biological mother had to sign a legal paper disavowing me. Then they had to send a social worker to our home. And when the social worker arrived, she had to sit us down and talk to us to make sure that this was a fit home." As some forces today may want to push civil rights and gay rights back 50 or 60 years, we must recognize how far we have come since 1963 and 1982, thanks in large part to the courage and determination of people like Baird Rustin. I think it's fair to say that we're not going back. And with that, we'll introduce Matters of the Heart. We're going to have a meditation song. It's going to be We Shall Not Be Moved, performed by the Freedom Singers. Again, it was from the 1963 March on Washington. And it's not our normal meditation thing, but just listen to the music. You don't have to sing along, and look at the images of the 1963 March on Washington.
This is our embodied faith, the fact that each week we set aside special time to be vulnerable. We know the importance of sharing to bring forward the highs and lows which come pouring out of our lives. And we know the importance of hearing from others' lives. If you feel so moved, I invite you to come forward and briefly share a joy or sorrow. If you are online, you may virtually or physically raise your hand and you will have an opportunity to share. Please start with your name.
We can bring this time of sharing to a close.
And we'll play Spirit of Life by Carolyn McDade, performed by our own Christine Perry. The words again will appear on the screen, so please feel free to sing along. Bayard Rustin wrote about himself, quote, "The principal factors which influenced my life are 1, nonviolent tactics, 2, constitutional means, 3, democratic procedures, 4, respect for human personality, and 5, a belief that all people are one." These sound pretty consistent with our UU principles and values. Bayard Rustin died in New York City in 1987 at the age of 75. He was posthumously praised by Ronald Reagan, and there's a whole story behind that too. Barack Obama awarded Rustin the Presidential Medal of Freedom posthumously on November 20th, 2013, and Walter Nagel, his partner, accepted the medal for him. Rustin also received an honorary doctorate from Cheney University, not far from here, and from Haverford College, also not far from here. In 1995, a Pennsylvania historical marker was placed at Lincoln and Montgomery Avenue in Westchester on the grounds of the Henderson High School, which Rustin had attended, and which he had actually represented in the Penn Relays, because he was also an athlete as a young man. In 2002, the Westchester Area School District voted 6-3 to name their proposed new high school the Bayard Rustin High School. And that school opened in 2006. Now, our closing song is going to be Woke Up This Morning With My Mind Stayed on Freedom. It's performed by Sweet Honey in the Rock. It's a good one to sing along to and, you know, get up and move to if you'd like. The words are going to appear on the screen, so please feel free to sing along if you want to. Just make sure that other people can see the words on the screen also.
Woke up this morning with my mind.
Oh, it was set on freedom.
Woke up this morning with my mind.
Set on freedom.
Woke up this morning with my mind.
It was
set on freedom.
Hallelujah.
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 I woke up this morning with my mind.
Stay.
Okay, very simple words for extinguishing the chalice. We extinguish this chalice, but not the light of love and hope and a passion for justice that we carry with us into the world. And now, my extinguishing partner is going to do the announcements.
Okay.